Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get ready to get blitzed on the Blitz podcast at thehuddle.com with your hosts Steve Gallo and Harley Schultz.
Welcome to the Blitz Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Gallo, joined by co-host Harley Schultz. Harley, we're entering week 7. Like, you still with me?
Yeah.
Cool.
Week 7?
7. Lucky 7. Yeah, 7. Halfway, just about basically halfway.
I was going to say, I don't know how lucky it is for the number of injuries we had this past weekend, but...
Oh, goodness, yeah.
Yeah, it's week 7. It's... I mean, most leagues end their regular season in week 14 or week 15, so we're halfway through the fantasy regular season.
Meaning pretty much what you see is what you get, right?
Yeah. I mean, we talked last week about determining whether or not you were a contender or a pretender, and by now, as the leaves have changed, so has the fortunes and the maybe if you opened your fortune cookie, you got that stern announcement last week that your team is doomed for the season, or you got that positive reinforcement that your team is ready to go all the way.
There you go. You know, you just gave me an idea for a business. Fantasy fortune cookies.
Oh, that would be fun.
That would be for drafts.
I'd write some weird Confucius says type commentary in there, but I'm sure that would be canceled really quickly.
Yeah, I could see people having those at their fantasy drafts and such, right?
I love that idea for at your fantasy draft. I mean, yeah, everyone gets a fortune cookie at the end, just like, I mean, and if you're a good Chinese restaurant or a good Asian restaurant, they will always give you one extra fortune cookie, so you don't have to settle for the last fortune cookie being the one you get. You always get to choose.
That's right.
So you open that fortune cookie, and one of two things happens. It'll give you a fortune based on your team, and or maybe it will give you a extra draft pick, or maybe a extra $5 in fab, or we could make this fun here.
You know what? You can make it like a wild card, like plus 2 points week 8 or something like that.
Exactly. Or you get to set your opponent's wide receiver 3 for week 7.
Yeah. You know what? Hey, we may have to spitball this after the season.
It's just an interesting concept for some sort of wild card game. I mean,
yeah.
And again, it's random luck of the draw. I mean, it's kind of like you open your fortune cookie and you get what you get.
Exactly. I don't know. I kind of like it. I like that little obscure, you just don't know what you're going to get kind of aspect of it. Kind of like fantasy on a week-to-week basis.
It could be a negative. It could be neutral.
Hey, you know what? You think somebody setting your third wide receiver is a negative? That might actually be not a bad thing, because I have a hard time with that, and I always pick the wrong guy.
Hey, yeah, it could end up backfiring on the person.
Yep. I like it. Do we need to make them beer-flavored?
Probably, yeah. And I think we have to copyright this now before anyone else steals our idea.
Yeah, exactly. I'll put it in a certified envelope and mail it back to myself, so that way we're covered.
Excellent.
I think that's a way to get around the copyright stuff, so that somebody can't steal something from you. Or if they do, you could say it was your idea.
Exactly.
So, in any event, tonight's kind of different for us. We're not taping during the football game on Monday night. We're taping well before it, instead of missing the football game. And the reason is because I'm a Phillies fan. I just have to say, The game comes on at 8:07 Eastern. We normally start taping at 8 o'clock. I asked Harley, can we make it happen earlier so that I can watch the game instead of that dreadful Monday night game that's going to be on? Yes, I'll be watching the Phillies tonight, hopefully, win in game one of the NLCS against the Diamondbacks. But football-wise, we're going to have a segment basically where we're going to tell you if somebody's a diamond or a cubic zirconia. Kind of a little fun little take on if they're worth the investment and what you'll get back from that investment. And then, of course, we'll have our normal pay-ups, stay-aways, and value plays for DFS for our daily stuff. And then that'll about do it. So before any of that can happen, got to throw it over to Harley for this week's Blitz Podcast News.
Thank you, Steve. I hate to begin the newscast with bad news, but if your team drafted a running back this season, any running back this season, I'm sorry to inform you, but for week 7, they are either injured or on bye or have been demoted into a timeshare. Enjoy! Jimmy Garoppolo was taken to a hospital midway through his game Sunday with a back injury. Now, that alone isn't a shocking news story. What is, however, shocking is that the team claimed he was just doubtful to return after he had already left the stadium to head to the hospital. I mean, did they really think he had any kind of chance of, you know, catching a cab and getting back to the stadium at some point in the game? Justin Fields missed a sizable portion of Sunday's game when he dislocated the thumb on his throwing hand. According to reports, Fields actually wanted to return to the game even though he couldn't grip a football. I mean, I'm not a pro football coach, and I didn't even spend last night at a Holiday Inn Express, but even I know that gripping the football is kind of important for the quarterback position. For the second consecutive season, a member of the Buffalo Bills needed to exit the stadium in an ambulance following a scary injury. Damar Hamlin and now Damian Harris. DH and DH. If I was Deontay Hardy, I'd be asking for a trade today. And finally, Baker Mayfield took the blame for the Bucs' loss on Sunday, stating after the game that he sucked. Congrats, Baker. Step one on the road to recovery is admitting you have a problem. This has been your BPN News Update.
Self-awareness. Self-awareness, right?
Self-awareness.
I saw somebody on Twitter. They said the Yuccaneers.
You know, and there was talk that Baker had a contusion on his hand. And I think that that may have been the case. I actually sat through most of that game. I apologize that I felt bad about Baker's performance because it looked like he was overthrowing and airing a few things further than they should have gone. The passes weren't very crisp. And in reality, Baker has actually performed quite well this season. And considering the number of injuries we've seen to quarterbacks this season and the underperformance by other quarterbacks, I mean, Baker is borderline a quarterback one right now.
Yeah, you know me. I don't like to talk about quarterbacks because they don't matter. But yes, no, he has done admirable. And imagine if Mike Evans could have caught a couple of those targets that went his way beyond the – I think he caught 4 of 10 or 11 targets.
Yeah, again, I do agree with Baker that part of that is to blame, though, because he did sky a few of those passes. And, again, it may have been the contusion on his hand. I don't know how serious the contusion is. Contusion doesn't sound like a very serious concern. So, I mean, I've got cuts on my hands from work. I know they hurt when I do stuff sometimes. So maybe he had a little cut. I mean, pitchers. I mean, you're watching baseball with the Phillies. The Phillies get a little blister on their finger, a small cut under their fingernail. All of a sudden, you can't throw a ball. I mean, if Baker was playing with a little cut under his fingernail, maybe he couldn't hold the ball. I mean, Justin Fields, he wants to throw a football, and he can't even grip it.
Yeah, they said he popped it back in himself after it happened, too, like, get out of here. Oh, I cracked my knuckles and I'm like, okay, I didn't hurt myself, did I? That's a little much. I can't imagine dislocating something, popping it back in and saying, okay, let's go. Give me that football. Let me hold it. Let me throw it. Let me take a hit from a 300-pound lineman. Like, yeah, those guys are crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to remember back. I think I had a shoulder popped back in in high school during a game once. And again, I mean, you just kind of, you look away. The trainer takes your arm. He does his thing. And I'd certainly not try to do it myself. Let's just put it that way.
I have an undiagnosed, we'll call it a rotator thing, that if I'm washing my hair or drying my hair with a towel every now and then means once to three times a year possibly, all of a sudden I get a pain that runs down my arm and I can't lift it above my shoulder. And I think I'm ready to go get in a fetal position and just, you know, curl up and die until it feels better. So, yeah. I don't want anything.
Yeah, that sounds really scary. I mean, that's like when you start talking about things like potential strokes and whatnot.
Oh, no, it's definitely muscular. It's something that's muscular related. I think the pain kind of goes into the bicep. I'm not sure where the rotator cuff impacts the arm, the bicep, the tricep, et cetera. But it's only when my hand is extended above my head. And think about when you're washing your hair, drying your hair, and you're running it back and forth. That motion, it's almost like a pitching motion in a sense, right? And I don't know what happens, but it hurts like a beep. That's all I'll say. Hurts like a beep. In any event, but that's also getting old.
Yeah. No, I can understand what you're saying. I mean, I've had numerous injuries to my arm over the year, mainly from both pitching and from bowling. And, one of the big things that, the doctors have said to me back when I was a kid, I mean, nowadays everyone goes and gets, Tommy John surgery when they're 13.
Yeah.
That wasn't really a common thing when I was a kid. So, and my arm is basically held together by old rubber bands and the chewing gum that we'd find in our trading card packages when we were like 8.
And we know that's pretty brittle. So
that's really brittle.
It sure is. All right. Well, you know what's not brittle? Diamonds are not brittle. Diamonds are hard.
Yes.
So why don't we just transition?
I think on the Mohs scale, they are the hardest thing.
They are, I believe, actually, yes. Harder than my head when I have something that I want to do, no matter what everybody says. Harder than that, which is hard. Let's do it. Let's jump into our diamond or cubic zirconia, as we'll call it. Yes, I know it's kind of hokey, but people like hokes, so hopefully they like this. And we're going to start off with my favorite position. Quarterback. Yeah.
Okay. So right now we're looking at a situation where on the season, and now hold your breath when you hear this. Your number 11 and number 12 overall passing yardage quarterbacks this season, Brock Purdy and Desmond Ridder.
Yes, and neither one of them are going to be who we're going to choose from for diamond or cubic zirconia. But these two guys,
I can say that at least one of them is a slightly rusty diamond, and one is most definitely a cubic zirconia. And I think our listeners already know the difference.
If there's a version of a cubic zirconia, that would be the latter one.
Yeah.
Okay, so these two guys are kind of interrelated in a sense. But let's talk about Matthew Stafford and Jared Goff. And I say that because Goff played in L.A. before he was shuttled off to Detroit, and Stafford brought in to replace him. Tell me about Stafford first. Are we looking at a diamond or are we looking at a CZ?
So Stafford has only had multiple touchdowns in one game this season. So that means 5 of his 6 games, he's only thrown for one touchdown. Now, he has thrown for over 300 yards in 3 games. So he's getting stuff done.
I believe.
But he's also faced.
I believe he's third. I'm sorry. I believe he's third in passing yards through the 6 weeks so far.
But he's also faced only one defense in terms of passing yards allowed above the top 15. He's faced 4 defenses that are considered on the bottom half of the league in terms of passing yards allowed. Upcoming for him, he faces only 3 teams that are worse than 15th against the pass right now, including games against the Browns, the Ravens, the Saints, and the Cowboys, all of whom which are in the top 10 against the pass. Now, he did get Cooper Kupp back, and he did a lot of his solid performances early in the season when he just had Puka Nacua and Tutu Atwell and no Cooper Kupp. So getting Cooper Kupp back certainly helps Matthew Stafford. He also is going to be playing most of his games in Southern California. So weather won't be an issue really when it gets down into the playoffs. Although he does have late season games at Baltimore and at the Giants. So a couple of possibilities there as you approach the end of the season. But in general, I think that he's proven over the years that he's last. Diamond's last, and Stafford is going to last, and he's got two weapons now to throw to. So despite his pedestrian touchdown numbers, I think the yardages will stay the same. And even with a tougher schedule coming up, I think you'll see his production will stay right about the same. Again, in that 260 to 280 passing yards and two touchdowns per game, again, particularly now that he's got his top weapon back.
Okay. Matthew Stafford is, like I said, he's third in passing yards. Let's talk a little bit about Jared Goff, who is actually fifth in the league in passing yards. And I believe that the Lions have beat, like, what, three or four or five straight opponents by double digits. First time they've done that since, like, 91 or something.
Mm-hmm. And ironically enough, Jared Goff also only has three games in which he's thrown for more than one passing touchdown. You'd think he's thrown for more than that based on how well Detroit has played, but in three of his games, he's only thrown for one touchdown. And he's only topped 300 yards twice versus the really bad Seahawks defense, and last week versus the Buccaneers that you have trouble running against, so they just kept throwing the ball. Despite the fact they got back Amon-Ra St. Brown, but they're still a little dinged up in their passing game there. So you got two teams, two different quarterbacks. They were traded for each other a few years ago. That's kind of how they tie the two together. But Jared Goff, on the other hand, he has faced only one team that was worse than 15th against the pass, and that was the Seahawks. The rest of his season, he faces five teams in the bottom seven against the pass and six teams in the bottom 10 against the pass in the league, including playoff time games against the Bears, Broncos, and Vikings. So, you know what? Jared Goff, get Mr. Gosling a ring because he looks pretty damn diamond to me.
Okay. I have a hard time disagreeing with that because I see them both as excellent zero quarterback options. So, of course, they're diamonds in the rough for me. The next guy I want to talk about, we're going to run on over to running back now, unless you want to talk about Brock Purdy or anything like that.
I don't want to talk about Brock Purdy.
Good.
I think he proved he didn't prove to the world, but I think we saw a glimpse through the looking glass with Purdy this past week when Christian McCaffrey and Deebo Samuel were both out, plus they lost their left tackle for a bit. And Purdy, all of a sudden, didn't look quite so Purdy in the package that they were using there. Obviously, he's got an incredible coach.
Yep.
Obviously, they've got decent depth on that team. But, I'm starting to worry a little bit about Purdy if these injuries start piling up for the 49ers.
Okay. I don't disagree with that. At running back, I want to talk about the guy that is right on the heels of Christian McCaffrey. I know he left early this week due to an oblique injury. But when I say right on Christian McCaffrey's heels, he is less than 9 points behind him in total points and fantasy points this year. Raheem Mostert has 11 combined touchdowns, 9 rushing. What are we looking at?
It's absurd what we're seeing with Mostert. And, I mean, he's never really been a reliable health issue. He's always seems to be hurt. And now all of a sudden he's been healthy this season and he's been playing. And the Dolphins offense is just so elite that he keeps getting set up with these short yardage situations where he's scoring touchdowns, but he's also adding receptions for touchdowns. And again, when you're averaging that many touchdowns per game, that just looks really, really juicy from a fantasy standpoint. And his schedule has been super easy so far. But the funny thing about that is his schedule doesn't get progressively harder. It actually stays pretty easy. The biggest question mark with Mostert right now is when or if Devon Achane comes back. Because when they were both playing, Achane was actually doing a better job – of scoring touchdowns on a faster pace. Now, he maybe get his touchdown on 6 touches versus Mostert getting his touchdown on 10 touches. But they both were scoring, so it wasn't like one was completely usurping the other one. But we also get the return this week of Jeff Wilson Jr., who has played alongside Mostert for most of their careers, both between San Francisco and now in Miami. So I have to assume that he's going to ultimately eat a little bit into Mostert's numbers. And even with the schedule not getting progressively harder, I still have to start wondering if and when this offense is going to start to slow down a little bit. Now, when you look at running back matchups, though, the running back matchups actually do get a little harder for him. They've got the Eagles next coming week. And the Eagles, again, a lot of that will determine whether or not they get their linebacker and their defensive line fully healthy. Again, that'll be a big factor in determining that. They face the Jets twice. They face the Commanders, and they face the Titans. And they face the Cowboys and Ravens in your fantasy playoffs. Two teams that have middling stats against the run this year, but who are known as being better stoppers of the run. So, again, it's not a great end-of-season schedule for Mostert. So, with the return of Wilson and the definite soon-to-be return of Achan, I think he's kind of a zirconia.
I don't disagree with you, actually. I think they both are, in a sense. And it's because I think that they are going to wind up cannibalizing themselves. You just can't
These
have
numbers
this.
Are unsustainable,
yes,
too, I think.
Correct. So what I was going to say was, combined, they have 18 touchdowns through 6 weeks.
That's absurd.
Imagine, remember, people were hoping that Jonathan Taylor went to Miami. Could you imagine? but, you know, whatever. I do. I agree with you. I think that he's a CZ, and I think Achan's a CZ also, not because of the talent, but because I think that they do wind up cannibalizing themselves. They'll still be running back 2 values. I don't think either one of them can hold their top 5 running back value that they both currently have. Mostert's number 2 currently, and Achan is 5. And that's with Achan missing almost 3 full games.
On either or both of them. From a redraft standpoint, I will say that. I think if you're in a dynasty format, I really don't see any recompense I would feel comfortable getting for Achan, because he looks like the real deal for long-term standing, particularly, again, with that offense being so incredible. And, again, there's no chance they bring back Mostert next year if Achan is still there and he's still performing like he does when he comes back from his injury.
Here's another thing, too. About a third of Mostert's numbers came from that one game against Denver, and almost half of Achan's came against Denver.
Mm-hmm.
So just something to consider. All right. I guess one other guy we can talk about in the running back spot, he ranks 7th right now in PPR. He's just under 100 total points. He's the first running back listed outside of that top 100 guys, and that's DeAndre Swift. Been pretty consistent this year outside of week 1 when Kenneth Gainwell got the start, but what are your thoughts on Mr. Swift?
Well, you know, when Swift went to Philadelphia, I think all of his dynasty owners looked at it and said, well, he's finally getting freed from the situation in Detroit, where last year he was kind of ignored in exchange for Jamal Williams at the stripe. And now, obviously, this season we found that despite the injury this past week, that Jahmyr Gibbs, who was drafted in the first round to replace DeAndre Swift, is also being ignored for David Montgomery. Now, again, we'll see what happens with Montgomery's injury affecting that going forward. But when you look at Swift's numbers, he's only had 2 big yardage numbers so far, and that was against the Vikings and, ironically, against the Buccaneers, 2 top 12 run defenses. Now, the rest of the time, he's kind of salvaged his lines through receiving yards and receptions. In week 5, he got 6 receptions for 38 yards. In week 6, he had 8 receptions for 40 yards and a touchdown. Those type of numbers certainly could continue. But you look at the Philadelphia offense, there's a lot of weapons in that passing game. So how many games are we going to see DeAndre Swift get 6 catches and 8 catches? That does not seem sustainable.
So
the yardage rushing could be sustainable, Although, again, you look at this past week against the Jets, and I just mentioned that Jets defense coming up be potential toughness for Raheem Mostert. 10 carries, 18 yards. That's not very good rushing the ball.
So here's the thing. You're right. The catches could be tough to hold at the 6-8 level, but 4-5, I think we could see. And then where I think it gets offset with is outside of the brotherly shove, I don't know that they really should. They'll be running Jalen as much at the goal line inside the 5 and 10 yard line, and that's where Swift can eat and pick up some TDs that'll help to make up for those catches that he's not getting. Right? Here's how I view him.
Well, as a Philly fan, we've seen this story before, though. Philadelphia uses so many running backs in their committee form. I mean, what's stopping them from using Boston Scott and Kenneth Gainwell and whoever else they want to bring up and start?
I think, well, one, you know, they did that when they didn't have a stud of a running back. They didn't do that with LeSean McCoy.
You're saying Miles Sanders wasn't a stud?
No, he was not.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. And Swift, though, has value, and like, there's a thin line or a fine line between, you know, where more is less and less is more, if that makes any sense. So you try to give him 25 carries, 30 carries a game, he's not going to last all season, right?
He only has the one game with more than 17 carries this season. That was the game against the Vikings where he had 28 carries for 175 and one. But I do believe Gainwell was out for that game.
He may have been. But no, definitely they're going to want to limit his rushes between the tackles and stuff like that. And I think that helps to keep his value. So we're playing this diamond or cubic zirconia. I'm going to tell you what I think he is. Because I think when you say diamond, people are envisioning a diamond in a ring, right, that you pay retail price for. You know what Swift was this summer? Swift was a diamond that you got from a wholesaler, and you had to go find a jeweler to set it for you, which means you got that diamond at a huge discount.
But I'll take you a step longer and say it's not a real diamond. It's a lab-grown diamond, so it may not keep its value the rest of the season.
All right, I won't argue with that, but I'm going to say he's not cubic zirconia. How's that?
I 100% agree with you there. The talent is there, and looking ahead to his playoff schedule, weeks 15 through 17, at the Seahawks versus the Giants and versus the Cardinals. As long as Philadelphia doesn't get too cute with giving Hurts the ball at the goal line and playing the other backs, that is about as juicy of a playoff schedule as you can look forward to. So, again, knock on wood that Swift stays healthy. He's played, again, every game except for the first game this year. He only played a few snaps. And that hasn't happened with a lot of running backs this year.
No. And I was in on Gainwell a little bit. I mean, in on Swift a little bit this year, but I was in more on Gainwell because he was basically free in drafts. I wish I was a little more in on Swift than I was, though. That does it for the running back spot. Now let's talk about the wide receiver spot. Let's talk about a guy that was basically on top of the world. Well, I guess on top of the world, but under Tyreek Hill, right? Before one of his partners came back, his partner in crime came back. Let's talk about Puka Nacua.
Well, the first 2 weeks of the season, he had 35 targets. Did anyone expect that? No, because going into the season, we heard all the sound bites and whatnot. Matthew Stafford didn't know the guy's name. 35 targets in the first 2 weeks. Those are big numbers for Cooper Kupp. And now Cooper Kupp is back, and it's the two of them trying to split touches. But we've already started to see the tilt starting to lean towards Kupp. In the last 2 weeks, Nacua has only 18 targets. So that's much different than 35 targets over the first 2 weeks. In addition, his catches have gone down. His yardage has gone down. And basically, a touchdown in week 5 kept him viable in that game. But, I mean, his performance against the Cardinals was very pedestrian. 4 catches for 26 yards on 7 targets. I mean, we're bordering on Robert Woods territory there. Now, I say Robert Woods in jest because early in their careers, Matthew Stafford made success in Los Angeles, beating both Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods. So there is a chance that Stafford can support two receivers. The problem is, Puka just, he looks like a great receiver. Now, I say this, he looks like a better football player than fantasy player. Yeah. And his numbers so far have been more fantasy player relevant than football player relevant, per se. But from a this season standpoint, I just can't get behind them the rest of the way. The schedule is mediocre at the next few weeks here. He's got the Cowboys, Packers, and Browns among his next six games. He does have an easier playoff schedule, including games against the Commanders and the Giants in weeks 15 and 17. But again, the weather is not going to be a problem there for most of those games. I can't get behind them as more than a bit of a cubic zirconia for this season. But obviously, again, next season, if the Rams decide to move on from Cooper Kupp, dynasty standpoint, I think you're holding them certainly. But just don't, you're not going to get 35 targets every 2 weeks out of this guy. You're going to probably get 20 targets at most.
So I'm going to steal what you said earlier, and I'm going to say that it is a CZ right now, but if something happens to Kupp anywhere along the lines, what you're going to find out is, oh, wait, that wasn't a CZ. That was a lab-grown diamond. So, yeah.
One thing you can look at with Nacua possibly helping him going forward is the team did trade Van Jefferson.
True.
So that's going to open up probably 4 or 5 targets a game, and certainly it's going to keep him on the field, which was probably the biggest concern. People were afraid that he was going to lose snaps on the field to Kupp. But with Jefferson out of the lineup now, we'll see both of them and Tutu Atwell on the field for most of the snaps when they're playing in three wide receiver possession type situations. So all three of them have some value, but it's Cooper Kupp show again. So Puka is going to be second fiddle.
Okay. So going from a young and a rookie basically at wide receiver to an old grizzled vet. What about Adam Thielen?
Well, you know what? I said that I like Puka because he's more of a great football player than he is a great fantasy player going forward. Adam Thielen has always kind of been that same way. I mean, anyone here in Minnesota will tell you he was undrafted. out of Minnesota State, Mankato, right down the freeway from where we are right now. And Adam Thielen has always been a great, gritty player. He goes and he gets those contested catches. He goes across the middle. And all we've heard in the last couple weeks from Carolina is how they want to acquire a number one wide receiver for Bryce Young. Earth to Carolina, you have a number one wide receiver. He just happens to be 33 years old, and he's more of a possession receiver type of guy. But he's got 48 targets over the last 4 weeks. He's topped 100 yards in 3 of those 4 games. And he's scored in 4 of his last 5 games. Those are number one wide receiver numbers. I regret to inform the people of Carolina. Those are number one wide receiver numbers. His schedule gets much tougher going forward. With games like against the Falcons, where he's going to be guarded by A.J. Terrell in the playoffs, against the Packers. Midway through the season, he's going to face the Cowboys and the Texans, both of whom have pretty good secondaries. He's probably not going to carry your team, but you didn't draft him to carry your team. You drafted Adam Thielen as your wide receiver 4 or wide receiver 5,
yep.
And you're playing him right now as your wide receiver 2. Be happy about that.
Yep.
Adam Thielen is a diamond. He's just not going to pay off like a diamond going forward.
I'll tell you what Adam Thielen is in the jewelry world. You ever see those rings that are clusters of small little chip diamonds?
Exactly. It's cloudy.
To make it look like it makes it look like it's a bigger diamond than it is.
Yeah.
To make it look more valuable than it is. That's Adam Thielen right now.
The other thing with Thielen is he is 33 years old. He does have a history of soft tissue injuries.
Yeah.
You got to assume at some point this season, again, he's going to have some tougher competition. Plus, they've got a few decent young receivers there to throw the ball to. I mean, obviously, he is the centerpiece of that offense right now. But Jonathan Mingo is starting to come on. And if you're looking for the receiver you might want from Carolina down the stretch, it might be Mingo more than Thielen.
That's understandable. So as you're where you're sitting right now, you think we only have one player left because we're going to move over to tight end. But I added another player that I'm going to shock you with after we get there. But the last one we're going to look at is at the tight end spot. Jonnu Smith, I think he's a good one to look at. Is he a diamond or is he a cubic zirconia?
It's scary to think that there was a point in time where Jonnu Smith was actually a fantasy relevant receiving tight end. Back in 2020 for Tennessee, where he had 8 touchdowns, and people were kind of looking at him like, oh, hey, this guy's got some value. He might be an effective tight end going forward. And dynasty leaguers were scooping him up and trading for him and stuff. And then, of course, over the next 2 seasons, he combined to have 55 catches and 1 touchdown. So what's he doing now? Oh, yeah, now he's stealing touches. He's stealing targets. And he's stealing just everything from Kyle Pitts, which really kind of sucks. It puts me in the pits as a multiple league pits owner. And when you look at these numbers here, 6 targets, 8 targets, 6 targets, 7 targets, 5 targets, those numbers are incredibly unsustainable for a guy with his profile. He's a 28-year-old who had 1 solid season, and it was a very touchdown-dependent season. He's not going to continue to get these targets. The team is already starting to realize that Kyle Pitts is a capable tight end, a very good receiver, and Pitts is closing in on Jonnu in every category. Now, I say that every category. He was actually leading in targets over Smith before this, but he's now catching up on him in receptions and yards. Pitts, 17 targets over the last 2 weeks, 30 targets over the last 4 weeks. You know, we give a lot of grief to Arthur Smith on the show here, and deservedly so, but Desmond Ridder finally being let go to pass the ball the last 2 weeks. Kyle Pitts and Drake London performed admirably, looking like actual dynasty stipend pieces now. Big time zirconia. I mean, it's not even a zirconia on Jonnu Smith. At this point, Jonnu Smith is like mica. It's like lowest on the Mohs scale.
Okay, I agree with you there. Hey, the one position I decided to throw in here while you were talking earlier, when you mentioned a team somebody would be facing, and I went, oh, you know what? We should talk about them. The Cleveland Browns as a defense, even if we don't talk about them from a fantasy standpoint, I want to give them 30 seconds to give them their flowers. They've given up like the least amount of yards the NFL has seen through 6 weeks since like 1970 or 71 or something like that. Only 2 teams have given up less yards. That defense, for real? Is that a cubic zirconia or a diamond?
Oh, it's a total diamond. That team is going out there and they're shutting down good offenses. They're playing solid defense and they're doing it on all aspects. They're stopping the run. They're stopping the pass. They're stopping wide receiver ones. They're stopping tight ends.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're just concentrating on one thing. If there's something they're not doing, maybe they're not getting a ton of sacks yet. But they're doing enough in their defensive pass game to frustrate and fluster opposing teams.
Yeah.
100% diamond on the Cleveland Browns.
I'm with
you. And anyone that invested in them in a team defense league, you've got to just be happy because so many years now, and you'll attest to this obviously being a Cleveland fan or your wife being a Cleveland fan,
yeah,
that they've been a laughing stock from a defensive standpoint in the past. So
yeah. Whatever it is, whenever you have expectations, whether it's offense or defense, they never live up to it. And I don't think anybody had any expectations of them this year, but they've just been fantastic, quite honestly. And I think initially it was overshadowed by the fact that, one, they played a Burrow that everybody thought wasn't, you know, himself yet, right? Then the following week, they gave up like 22 points or something like that to Pittsburgh. But 14 of those points were on the offense. The defense didn't give them up type thing. You know what I mean? With 2 pick sixes or whatever it was. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've been a damn solid team. So with that, we can transition from diamonds and cubic zirconia to trying to help people have enough money to buy diamonds instead of cubic zirconia by doing our DFS stuff. For those that don't know, Harley and I don't discuss this in advance. We did discuss some of the players we would be talking, but not necessarily what our stances would be for the last segment. But for this, Harley's going to set an over-under, and then we're going to see what we can match up on what is possibly the absolute assest of all assest player pools we've ever seen.
This week is god awful. I mean, let's start off with the fact that we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the top offenses in football, Jacksonville, Miami, Philadelphia, San Francisco, and Minnesota, all playing outside the main slate. You've got 6 teams on bye this week. We're looking at some really, really bad players. I mean, and it's not like we're talking about bad players just because the matchup is bad. We're talking about situations where, like we mentioned earlier, Desmond Ridder is the 12th ranked passer right now in the league for the season in terms of yardage. On this pool here at quarterback position, Desmond Ridder is ranked 16th on DraftKings.
Yeah, that's.
I guarantee you, I'm not going to be starting Desmond Ridder this week. Are you?
You'll have to tune in to find out. set the over-under first, and let's get at it.
I'm going to set the over at 5. In fact, you know what? Because I've got 2 players for 1, I'm going to set the over at 5.5.
All right, I'll take the under.
Okay.
I'll take the under, although it's going to be hard not to match on that many, I think. We'll see.
It's a thin pool, so.
Yep. All right. Who are you paying up for at the quarterback spot? I think we're going to match like two in a row right away, but go ahead.
Well, there's 2 players that deserve consideration here, and they're facing each other in really the only game of any consequence this week, and that is Kansas City versus the Chargers. I'm going to go with the higher-priced quarterback who's struggled a little bit more this season, and that's Patrick Mahomes because he is at home. Both quarterbacks are good, but realistically, Kansas City's defense is better than that of the Chargers, and it's at home. So yep. I think Mahomes is going to have a slightly better day, but they're both going to be big in what's going to be a shootout.
I agree with you. The main tipping point is the fact that he is at home versus the fact that the entire field is just putrid beyond that game. So yeah, I'm just going to pay up for the top guy. Who are you staying away from?
Well, it typically form is if I pay up the highest price guy, I tend to stay away from the second highest price guy, and that is the case again this week. I'm going to stay away from Josh Allen on the road in New England. Now, the last 2 weeks, Allen has looked off, mainly because I think he's been trying to overfeed Stephon Diggs. Now he's going to face the Patriots on the road. Now, their defense is nowhere near as dominant as they used to be, but they are stingy enough to make Allen not a good buy, particularly if he tries to force feed Diggs more, because they're going to be working on shutting down Diggs. That's kind of their thing.
Yeah, we have our second match. I had a feeling we could match there because I looked at it like you did. Paying up for the top guy, might as well avoid the next highest price guy.
Now, here's where it gets really ugly. What do you consider a value this week?
All right, I'm just going to tell you we're not going to match here. Okay.
Okay.
I'm punting this position. Do you want to know what I wrote down as my selection for value play? Puke.
PJ Walker.
No, I wrote puke. Puke. P-U-K-E.
They're interchangeable terms, aren't they?
Yes. So that is what I do not have a value play this week. I'm sorry. There just isn't one.
Well, I seriously considered making Justin Herbert my value play.
I did too. But I couldn't do it.
I actually settled on 2 guys that I kind of thought could be possible values this week. And then between the 2 of them, I chose the one I felt a little bit more confident in. Now, neither is really a super value when you look at their price tags. One is $5,800 on DraftKings, and he's also $7,800 on FanDuel, which is way too high.
Yep.
The other one is at $5,500 on DraftKings and $7,400 on FanDuel. Again, I'm not paying that price on FanDuel for either of them. But if you want a value, a little bit cheaper price on DraftKings, you can use Jordan Love or Sam Howell this week. I think both of them are good plays. Love is the guy that I ultimately chose. They are on the road in Denver, but Denver's allowed the most passing yards, the most passing touchdowns this season. And Love has multiple scores in 4 of his 5 starts this season. So, again, $5,800, I think he makes a nice pivot if you want to save some money at the quarterback spot.
Yeah, I looked at him, and what pushed me away was I looked at the FanDuel price, and I was like, yeah, I can't even like entertain that. My concern with Hal is, man, I don't know if we're going to get a 9-6 game in New York or if it's going to be, you know, 44-39 type game or something. If it was in Washington, I would have liked him a little bit better. And the $7,400 is way too high for him also. you could theoretically play Daniel Jones at $5,600 and $7,100 if he's out and make out better in net points than if you play some of those guys who could wind up negative points fantasy-wise this week.
I mean, the only one of those deep, deep dives that might be worth considering is if we do find out that Jimmy Garoppolo is out, possibly going with either Brian Hoyer or Aiden O'Connell on the road in Chicago. Again, obviously, this time of year, you got to wonder about some winds or possible rains down there, though, too. So that could be a factor. And Chicago, for that matter, too. If Justin Fields isn't able to play, the rookie Tyson Bagent actually looked pretty good this past week. He had a couple of lame duck passes, but he also threw some really tight spirals on a couple other passes. So he's a possibility. And, I mean, God, if you... The only player with a decent price on FanDuel that could be considered a sleeper, Kenny Pickett?
Right, exactly. And I don't like that he's going on the road. I know they're coming off of a bye, but I don't like that he's going on the road to L.A. So
exactly.
So that's why I'm going to stick with puke. Sorry, that's what it is. I've never done that. That's a new thing for us, but it is what it is, as they say. All right, let's talk about running backs. This isn't much better than quarterback, quite honestly, in my opinion. Who are you paying up for at the running back spot?
I take Josh Jacobs at Chicago, 7,400 on DraftKings, 8,000 on FanDuel. Chicago has allowed the most running back receiving yards and receiving touchdowns, and Jacobs leads all running backs in receiving yards, and he's second in total receptions by the running back position. Again, if Garoppolo is out, we probably will see even more touches for Jacob, either in short passing game and or the running game this coming week.
So I initially had Austin Eckler written down. I was like, well, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to go big this, like I did with PM, with Patty Mahomes, right? In that if LA is going to stay in that game, Eckler's going to have to be involved, right? Even if it is more with the passing game. But I looked at that game in Chicago, and the Bears defense is far from, you know, the monsters of the Midway that we had back in the 80s. And the injury to Garoppolo is why I kind of like him a little more. So just kind of like you hinted at, I think that there's a higher level of chance that they really lean on him. So I decided I'll save $1,200 and $1,400 and I'll pay up for Josh Jacobs this week.
Yes.
Who are you staying away from?
You know, I didn't hate any of the non-injured guys up top. I mean, I ignored David Montgomery because we don't know his injury status yet.
Yeah.
I ignored Kyren Williams because we don't know his injury status right now. We don't know Aaron Jones' injury status right now. So I kept going down the board to find someone that was healthy that I didn't like. And I settled on the ninth highest priced guy on DraftKings, and that's Jonathan Taylor. Now, it sucks to be me because, again, I told you already I'm a big Jonathan Taylor stan and I've got him on his team. But he's facing Cleveland. And as we talked about, Cleveland's defense is 100% legit. Taylor's still splitting touches with Zach Moss, despite being eminently more talented than Zach Moss. You can't trust him right now.
You can't, but you know what? At 6,500 on both sites, which even says something, I didn't even get down that far. The guy I'm staying away from, I mentioned the game, how I said I wouldn't be shocked if it was a 9-6 game, right? He came back last night, admirably looked pretty well from what it sounds like. I didn't see much of the game, unfortunately. But Saquon Barkley, there's no way I'm paying that kind of dollar price for him, even though he is at home. Washington's front is not easy to run on. He's going to have better play from Tyrod if Danny Dimes isn't back. And that team does not inspire me right now to where I want to pay the second highest price at the running back spot. So Jonathan Taylor hasn't looked like much since he's been back, but I think that Barkley's just way priced out of where he should be right now.
I agree.
All right, let's match on the value play because I think that I had one guy that jumped out at me, and I think that there's a chance you could be on him too.
Well, so here is the situation where I had two guys.
Okay.
And again, one of these guys is based on a potential injury. My first listing was A.J. Dillon at Denver if Aaron Jones is out. He's 5,300 on DraftKings, 6,400 on FanDuel. When you look at Denver, every single lead back to face Denver this season has gone crazy. Some secondary backs have gone crazy. So even if Jones plays, Dillon will still return value this week. But the guy I settled on as my top play this week at Bellevue is Brian Robinson in that New York Giants game, because every lead back except James Cook this past yesterday evening went berserk against the Giants. So I'm going to go with Brian Robinson, 5,800 on DraftKings, 7,300 on FanDuel, or A.J. Dillon at Denver.
Well, I it's hard to disagree with either one of those, quite honestly. I really thought that you would land on this one. I'm actually stacking my running backs, my pay-to-play running back and my value-play running back, in the same game against each other. I'm going with Deontay Foreman, 4,800. I don't love the 6,300, not in the least. But the $4,800 price tag on DraftKings for Foreman at home, want to protect whatever quarterback you're going to have lined up behind center there. I expect him to log 20-plus carries easily.
You know, I was a big player for Deontay Foreman last week. I think I had him as my sleeper running back. You may have as well.
Yeah.
And so I like Deontay Foreman. The only reason I didn't look at his price tag there is because I'm a little concerned that we might see Roshan back this week. That could affect his playing time some. But, yeah, I mean, if for whatever reason Roshan is still out, 4,800 on DraftKings, 6,300 on FanDuel, I'd have no problem starting Foreman against the Raiders at home.
Even if Roshan's back, I still think he sees the lion's share. So I would think that they would ease him back a little bit coming off of a concussion.
He did look pretty darn good last week, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Okay, wide receiver. I don't know that the muckety-muck's any better at wide receiver, but we'll try. who are you going to pay up for at wide receiver?
Well, you know, I'm just blowing my budget on these high-priced guys this week. I'm going to pay up for the top guy on the board, and that's Cooper Kupp. 9,500 on DraftKings, 9,700 on FanDuel. Oh, good, nice. Give us a little break on his pricing, why don't you? It's only 2 weeks back.
Yeah.
Jeez, right. Come on, guys. He's only played, despite only playing five games this season, Pittsburgh has allowed the seventh most receiving yards and receiving touchdowns to wide receivers. So, I mean, imagine if they had played six. They might be leading the league in those yards to allow.
That's true. We don't match, and it's going to be, maybe I'm stuck in the past. I don't know. I'm actually paying up for Amon-Ra St. Brown. A little bit further down the list, 8,800. Got back this week, played well. As far as I know, he didn't have any complications, right? He's not injured still, so he's going to play. Baltimore has issues in the secondary. So I think that we see St. Brown continue to feed, and Jameson Williams being back, I think, helps him that with that, because as we saw, he can take the top off of a defense.
And truth be told, I like putting both those guys in my lineup this week.
Well, we'll see. Maybe that'll happen. Who knows? Who are you staying away from?
We talked about staying away from his quarterback. We're going to stay away from the top receiver, and that's Stephon Diggs, too. Opposing wide receiver ones are averaging only four catches for 42 yards and one half a touchdown a game against the Patriots. They take away your number one receiver. These are the lines for number one receivers against the Patriots this year. Two catches for 29 yards. Two catches for 12 yards and a touchdown. Four catches for 36 yards and a touchdown. Five catches for 48 yards. Five catches for 40 yards and a touchdown. And the high water mark, seven catches for 79 yards. These were against legit wide receiver ones, guys like CeeDee Lamb, Tyreek Hill. We're not talking about Ham and Egger wide receiver ones here. We're talking about good high-end wide receiver ones being held in check by the New England Patriots. It's what they do. Put Stephon Diggs on your bench.
So we don't have a match, and you may find this funny. The guy you paid up for is who I'm staying away from. It's at home. And I know that Pittsburgh's not the Pittsburgh of old, but they're coming off of a bye.
Yeah.
And just paying 95 and 9,700, knowing I need to get 30 points basically out of him, it just is too risky. And when I could see Amon-Ra St. Brown at $1,500 discounted to that, that's a big difference for me. So that's why I paid up for somebody lesser, and I'm staying away from the highest price guy on the board.
I can see that argument.
Who is your value play?
My value play is a gentleman that has scored in three straight games. It should be pointed out that over that three-game stretch, only two other wide receivers have more total scores than him. And over that same span, only 10 have more receptions than him. Now, of course, I'm talking about the number 3 receiver for the Washington Commanders, Curtis Samuel, at the Giants.
That's definitely something that's going to make people go, what? Huh? He was a darling, was it last year or the year before?
A couple years ago.
I forget how long he's been in Washington now, and he was pretty much lost to injury. So I don't hate it. Again, I just have a feeling that could be one of those. You're either going to be right, and it's going to be there's going to be 70 points scored in that game, and he'll eat, or it's going to be less than 20 points scored, and it's going to be a defensive battle. I'm not willing to risk that. However, I am stacking my wide receivers. You hinted at it earlier. Guess who my value play is? It is Jameson Williams. I wrote his name down, and I crossed it off. I was like, can't have him as my value play. I got Amon-Ra St. Brown as my payout. And then I said, nope, wrote Jameson Williams' name down again. I have conviction. Jameson Williams is my value play of the week this week.
I will actually give one more name for our listeners to consider this week. And again, I mentioned earlier that I did the dirty work and watched a lot of the Tampa Bay game last week. I'm sorry that I had to sit through it, but I did. One of the big issues that Baker had was overthrowing receivers. But one of the things we did see a lot of was targets for the youngster, Trey Parker. Yes, for some reason I started calling Trey Palmer Trey Parker this week. And I don't know why I did that, because Trey Parker is the guy from South Park and Trey Palmer is the receiver for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But Tampa Bay is facing Atlanta, and as we mentioned, Atlanta has an elite coverage corner in A.J. Terrell, who will likely be shadowing Mike Evans. That means that it's going to be Chris Godwin and Trey Palmer being the primary targets for Baker Mayfield this week. And Palmer's price, $3,600 on DraftKings, $5,100 on FanDuel, is way, way cheaper than that of Chris Godwin's.
That is true. That's not a bad value play. That's one of those ones where you make your lineup and you go, okay, I'm going to swap this guy and I'm going to push him in just in case. We'll see what happens. Well, Mr. Tight End Whisperer, lead us off.
Well, I would feel really amiss to say that we didn't already say that there's one game that is going to be an offensive juggernaut game this week, and that's the Chargers at Kansas City.
Yep.
So I'm going to stack my quarterback and my tight end, and I get both Mahomes and Kelsey in there and kind of build around them.
Wait, so you're not paying up for Donald Parham Jr.?
Oh, well, we haven't seen yet if he's healthy enough to play tonight. So if he is, then okay. Maybe.
Gotcha. Well, we have a match. Mr. Kelsey, there's not much more is need to be said, right? If he's healthy enough to play at home, price is high, but he's going to have 680 and a score at least, I would think. Wouldn't be shocked.
He wasn't healthy last week, and he went off for 10 catches and over 100 yards.
Right, exactly. So until they say he's not playing, he's not on the field, he's going to be worthy of consideration of a payup every week. With that said, who are you staying away from?
I'm going to stay away from the same guy I stayed away from this past week, and that's Sam Laporta. This time he's at Baltimore. Baltimore's allowing an average of 3.7 receptions and 25 scoreless yards per game to opposing tight ends. Now, you talked earlier about how they've got some secondary deficiencies. Those deficiencies are more targeted towards the outside wide receivers and not towards the tight ends, which they've held completely in check this season. So I'm not going to pay the third highest price on both sites for Laporta, considering his usage, too. His usage has been down a little bit. But when you look at things, he's getting targeted still. He got 11 targets last week, even with the return of Jameson Williams, but he only caught 4 of them. That's becoming a bit trendy in the wrong way. He's caught 5 passes, 4 passes. He's got one game with more than 5 catches this year. That is not a trend I love to see for the third highest priced guy.
Yeah, I get it. He's not who I picked. And you could probably guess that if I picked the highest priced guy, I was probably staying away from Mark Andrews, right? No, I'm not.
Detroit actually hasn't been very good against the Titans, right. So I don't mind that one there.
And that's how I look at him. I'm like, he's going to get his, right? So if you want to pay for him, I get it, but I'm just not going to make him my pay up over Travis. I did look at Laporta, but there's one other guy that's close that, again, I'm just so worried about this game, and maybe overly so. I don't like Darren Waller this week at all. He's the 4th highest priced guy on the board. And I just don't think he should be right now. So I'm making a stand and saying I'm staying away from Darren Waller.
Well, the good thing about Waller, and we've seen this the last two games, New York is making a concerted effort to make him the focal point of that offense. Even with the return of Saquon Barkley this past week,
yeah.
Waller has been peppered, be it Daniel Jones or Tyrod Taylor. He's getting targeted over and over again. And yes, he was robbed of that touchdown on the last play with a bad pass interference call back-to-back there at the end of the game. The Giants should have won yesterday, and that should have been pass interference.
I get it. The game just feels like a low-scoring, ugly defensive battle that I want no part of any of the offenses from. So that's where I stand on that. How about value play? What do you got there, Mr. Tight End Whisperer? I know you're going to have somebody for like $1,800.
This is where I like to go diving, and doing all the fun little dipsy-do type moves to find the best value play at the tight end position this week. I'm going to go with a guy who's had a couple of good games. In his two most recent games where he's been healthy, he has 15 total targets and 12 receptions, finishing number two and number one in both categories in each of those two games for his team. And while his yardage has been really kind of meager, the team he's facing this week has given up the most yards to the position this season. His opponent, the Denver Broncos, the value play, pairing him up with my value pay quarterback of Jordan Love, is Luke Musgrave.
Okay. I don't dislike it at all, but Musgrave is costing $3,300, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's costing $5,000. My guy is only costing $700 more and $600 more. I just can't. I'm on a roll, and you know me, I'm loyal. I can't quit him. Kyle Pitts is going to be my value play again. I will ride Kyle Pitts as a value play until they get him above $5,000.
The prices are cheap enough on Pitts to definitely keep playing him. And in that same price range, if Pat Freiermuth is healthy enough to play this game, he'd become the potential play too against the Rams, who have been really atrocious against the position this year.
That was my one concern about Pat is he going to be able to play, or how healthy is he going to be? Because he was questionable going into the bye week. So. And he's
now, as a defensive specialist, though, perhaps you can talk a little bit to the fact that I've always thought of Tampa Bay as being very skilled and very fast in their linebacker core. Is that going to pose a problem for Pitts?
It could, honestly. You've got Devin White and Levante David, who are two fantastic linebackers. But I still think that they're going to now they're using him more, and you can use him in the slot too, right? He's not just an inline tight end. So I still think there's enough there to make him a value at 4,000. Basically, what I'm saying is, I think he's at least 3 to 4 catches for 40 to 50 yards with a touchdown. That gets you value.
Totally.
And with a guy like Pitts, it could be twice that, right? Maybe I'm just stuck on his upside still. But I just don't see much downside with playing him at those prices right now.
Two other deep dives to consider this week, too. We mentioned that Freiermuth, if he is not playing, consider the humongous backup tight end Darnell Washington, the rookie. He could be a potential play at 2,500. Also at 2,500 is the returning Greg Dulcich, who should be back out there this week after missing a few games due to injury. And a guy who kind of came up this past week with Brian Hoyer under center, Michael Meyer, looked like he was starting to prove that he deserves to be the starting tight end in Las Vegas over Austin Hooper, facing Chicago again. We've talked about the fact that that game could be really ugly. It could be low scoring. But again, you got two unproven quarterbacks throwing against each other. They do tend to lean on their tight ends, making a guy like Michael Meyer a potential stud this week.
Yep. Don't disagree with that at all. So there you have it. The under hit. Let me double check this. Patrick Mahomes, Jared Allen match. JJ in Las Vegas, Josh Jacobs, we matched. No Saquon, Dante, we didn't match. No Amon, no Jameson. Kelsey, we matched. So, yeah, we're looking at, we've got four matches. So the under hit. How about that? That's the first time we won in a while, I think. So with that said, if you have any questions, of course, you can follow Harley on Twitter. I'm sorry, X, whatever. I hate saying it. You can follow Harley on social media at Nuclear Harley. You can follow me at Steve Gallo NFL. If you haven't done so, do it. Go ahead and get that Huddle subscription. There's all kinds of wonderful tools for you to use to help dominate the rest of your season and the start of next year. And until then, what I'm going to say is a little bit different. Go Phils. No, get blitz responsibly. Cheers.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.